I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
I feel really lucky, though, to have found this field because it gets to combine a lot of my interests of Indigenous culture and history, but also scientific methods, and then in the end, for the communities that I'm working with rather than for non-Native people.
This is Ashley Thompson. Ashley is Ojibwe and a member of the Red Lake Ojibwe and Eagle Clan in northern Minnesota. She lives in Tucson, Arizona, and is getting her PhD in anthropology with a concentration in archaeology. Ashley is also a runner, climber, photographer, and lifelong learner. On this episode, we talk about how she's woven her many interests together and is actively building a life that is true to her values and true to herself. Ashley and I talked on May 13th. We were, and still are, in the midst of a pandemic, and the week before had been especially raw for Ashley as a runner and an Indigenous woman. May 5th is the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Native Women, and that same day a video was also released of Ahmaud Arbery's death when he went out for a jog. Since our interview, the national conversation has shifted. I'm so grateful to Ashley for taking the time and for sharing a piece of her story with us, which starts and ends with a woman who has had a great deal of positive influence in her life. We'll get to know Ashley after this. At Danner, they believe in the quality of their footwear, and Danner's Trail 2650 hikers are made with the company's tried-and-true standard for durability and comfort. Inspired by and named for the 2,650-mile Pacific Crest Trail, these versatile trainers are built to keep you moving quickly and confidently through any terrain. Crafted with lightweight materials meant to withstand tough conditions, they provide traction and stability on uneven ground. A foam midsole cushions the foot and maintains a light load, while the outsole offers confidence-inspiring grip for every step in any condition. Available with breathable mesh lining or waterproof Gore-Tex, the Trail 2650 is up for a variety of landscapes. Whether hitting the trail or strolling through town, these shoes are ready for the rigors and rewards of your next adventure, whenever the timing's right. Learn more at danner.com. That's danner.com. We're back. We'll jump in and get to know Ashley shortly, but first I want to make what might seem like a really obvious statement that I haven't emphasized enough on this show. Ashley's story is her own. She doesn't speak for all Ojibwe people or Indigenous archaeologists. Her story is personal and always evolving, and it's an honor that we get to hear it today. Also, a quick content warning for this episode. Ashley and I talk high level about childhood neglect and trauma at the beginning, and substance abuse, recovery, and sobriety towards the end. Before almost every interview I get to do, I hop on the phone with the interviewee for a casual conversation, not unlike the one we record. It's an opportunity to get to know each other without the pressure of a mic or thinking too much about your words. When I asked Ashley what she wanted to talk about, she excitedly mentioned her grandmother, who's been on her mind during this pandemic.
I have a mom who is Ojibwe, and then I have my dad who is white. And so it's my white grandmother on my father's side. And she is 83 years old. She's turning 84 in June. But when my brother and I were quite young, about pre-K age, we were placed into foster care. Both of our parents had issues with alcoholism and other addictions. And so Andrew and I were in foster care in Minneapolis.
Ashley and her brother were in foster care for just a short period of time because her grandmother took them to live with her in Salt Lake City.
I think a lot about her because I feel so grateful to her for the life that she was able to give my brother and I, because I honestly don't think I would have had the educational opportunities I've had and other life opportunities without her influence and without her care and love and raising us. So she's a very important woman in my life and also in a lot of people's lives, to be honest, just as being a nurse for a number of years on a long-term pediatrics floor at the University of Utah Hospital. And then she has also been a community volunteer and has volunteered many years in a first grade classroom. So I know she's touched a lot of lives, including mine.
What are some of the things that you might say you have in common with her?
Sometimes I want to be more like her. She's an amazing people person. So she's able to connect with a wide range of people. My entire life, I've just seen her be able to talk to anyone. And that's something I've really admired about her. But she is a really great writer. So I aspire to be a great writer like her. Hmm. She also has a great eye for nature. And by that, I mean she really pays attention to our surroundings wherever we are and points out things that she sees that she likes. So she might, in Utah, notice, you know, when the sun is setting to the west of the valley, she'll notice how the Wasatch Mountains are lit pink and she'll point that out to us. Or she'll notice people's gardens and certain flowers and how they're doing. So I think just having her in my life since I was young, pointing out those things and noticing the beauty, even within the city, Salt Lake City itself, I think she, in a way, helped me to see the natural world around us and see the beauty of things. And I think that has definitely rubbed off on me. She's also she kind of introduced me to running, which I've held on to since I was little. So she put me in my first 5K races when I was a kid, and she would walk them very fast, but she was like in her 60s and I was small. And so I also think we have that in common, just a love for like walking and running and overall wellness, I would say.
As we'll hear throughout this conversation, wellness is one of many constants in Ashley's life. She started running her junior year of high school when she was encouraged to join the cross-country team by the coach and competed on a Division III team in college as well.
It's been an important life, part of my life since, I would say, my junior year of high school, which was, that was a while ago, like 12 years ago now or something, but... And today I continue to race. I've kind of transitioned more to trail races, longer distances, like half marathons, but training on two different teams for about 6 years, I built up a base and knowledge about the sport and learned a lot about myself, about injuries, like a lot of things through those years. Continue to run today. And it's a good thing because there's not many more sports we can do during during this COVID epidemic. So
One of the things that I feel like I often bring up or think about a lot is those constants that are in your life. And running is definitely one of those for you. It's just it's been a constant. And I'm glad that you're still able to do it right now, because like I think I bet it would be hard if you couldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like to think about constants too, because I don't know, when you come from a sort of tumultuous childhood where you lived in a few different places and with different people and you've kind of lived in a few different states, it's fun and comforting to think about those things that have stayed the same. And so I am really thankful every day that I have the ability to run right now and that I'm healthy for that, and that I don't have such strict stay-home orders that I can't even go outside. So it's definitely been a source of happiness, and also it keeps me mentally sane during these times. So I'm very grateful for it.
This was solidified for Ashley in her college years. She went to University of Minnesota, Morris, free of tuition. It felt a little bit like fate. Her grandmother's family on her dad's side was from the small town of Morris, and some of her family had also attended the college. Also, because the school has the dark history of having been a Native American boarding school from 1887 to 1909, Ashley was able to attend the university free of charge.
There was this, for me personally, this family legacy at this school, this connection to that town where my grandma had grown up, as well as now this financial opportunity for me to attend there free of tuition. It just seemed like it was meant for me to go there. And I'm so glad I did, because I was introduced to a lot of things that I'm passionate about today. So, because when I moved to Utah, I lost a lot of that connection to the Ojibwe community and that side of my family. And so when I was able to return to Minnesota and go to a university that actually has a very high Native American student body compared to other public universities because of the tuition waiver. So they have between 10 and 15% of their student body is Native, when in most public universities, it's less than 1%. And so being able to go to college and meet other Ojibwe students, reestablish my connections to Red Lake, start doing the Ojibwe language table, taking Anishinaabe song and dance, and just all of these things that I felt I had missed out on in my youth and my childhood, I was able to be reintroduced to. And it was a really, for me, an empowering experience in which I was proud to be Ojibwe, and I started to learn what that actually meant. And so I actually ended up getting, one of my majors was in American Indian Studies, because I just so much enjoyed learning about the indigenous contributions, indigenous histories, indigenous cultures of Turtle Island or North America. And so I really can't have imagined going to any other school, because it just seems so perfect for me. And if you think about it, like, two sides of my family created that perfect experience. Like, if my grandmother hadn't been born and raised in Morris, Minnesota, this small town in the middle of nowhere, or if I hadn't, you know, been an enrolled member of my tribe, just everything seemed to fall into place for me to experience what I did there and just kind of grow into the person that I am today.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I'm so glad that you went there too, because, you know, it's so easy to go somewhere else. There's all these little life decisions that happen. And I know we talked on the phone about how you look back and you feel like it couldn't have happened any other way, but I don't know. There's just so much that you go through when you are, you know, 18 to 22, and if you are fortunate enough to get to go to school in that way and to learn those things about yourself, but, like, to also have that rediscovery of your culture is just, it's just incredible.
Absolutely. And one thing that I really appreciate about education is, in school and in American Indian Studies, for my classes there, I started hearing this word that I'm very familiar with now, but I had never heard of it before. And it's called historical trauma or intergenerational trauma. And it's this phenomena that happens when, for example, within the Native community, our ancestors experienced a lot of trauma, whether it be genocide or removal to reservations or assimilation tactics like the boarding school era. And those traumas get passed down through the generations. And so not only was I, like, learning Ojibwe language and started returning to my community more and that sort of thing, but I started to really understand more about my family's history and my community's history. And so for a while, I was really bitter about why I had to have been raised by my grandmother and, you know, why I had to have this tumultuous childhood. And I always felt like a weirdo in Salt Lake City, like, just kind of like I didn't fit in. Like, I was, you know, a Native, like, Ojibwe girl being raised by my grandmother. But when I went to school and I started learning about intergenerational trauma, I was able to take a step back and see why my family is the way it is, why my mother had addiction issues, why. And then I also learned that her parents also had their issues. And so my mother, for example, when she was a child, she was taken away from her parents, and she was also put into the foster care system at a pretty young age. And so you kind of see this intergenerational trauma. Once I learned about what it is and the impact it can have on individuals, families, and community, I was able to kind of forgive my family and also look at them with a lot more compassion and empathy than I ever did before. So it allowed me also to start this process of healing for me, but also for my family.
Yeah, because obviously the source of that trauma was so outside of themselves. It was colonization and white people.
Exactly. And like I could no longer hold my mom to this ridiculous standard after all she's experienced and her family has experienced and our community has experienced because of the forces of settler colonialism. And I'm glad to help be one of the first people of my generation and my family to start to break that cycle and get an education and make healthier choices for myself and my family.
Ashley's undergrad experience led her to pursue a PhD in anthropology with a focus in archaeology. She started off as an environmental science major and came to love field research.
I discovered that I really loved, you know, working outside and I liked the sciences, but my true passion was sort of more in American Indian studies. And so I loved my anthropology classes. So I loved learning about people and culture, and especially from Indigenous perspectives. So I had one professor who was a cultural anthropologist, and she was Native, and she'd worked with a Michigan Ojibwe community. And so she was able to share her research, some of it with us. So I was really inspired by her to actually change my major to anthropology. And I was thinking about how I really loved field work and how I discovered that with the different ecology projects I had worked on. And so I took archaeology as part of my major requirement off of the advice of two of the archaeology professors. They recommended that I do an archaeological field school if possible, because it was, you know, archaeology is the study of human history through the things that humans leave behind. So learning about it in the classes is fine, but there's this whole other set of experiences where you do, well, you can do a variety of different research methods, but one of the major ones is excavation, where you can go to a site and dig for artifacts and to learn more about that people. And so off of their advice, I applied for a scholarship for a field school. And I got it. And so I was able to choose within reason any field school I wanted. And I chose one that was run through the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Cool.
Yeah. And so, and I chose that one because the research sounded interesting. They were working on this really ancient site called the Mead site, where the oldest component of the site is around 12,000 years old. So that's, they call that Paleo Indian, but so it's really ancient Native ancestors. And that site is located in the interior of Alaska. And so I got to spend a couple of months up there and just learn hands-on how to do excavation. And I really fell in love with field work. And some archaeologists, you know, they work in other places. I have an old roommate, you know, she does her archaeological research in Greece. And I have other people in my program. They do research all over the world. But I like archaeology here because I feel like I get to continue that lifelong learning of the Indigenous peoples of the Americas.
We'll hear more from Ashley about why it's so important for her to pursue a career as an Indigenous archaeologist on Turtle Island, or what we now call America, after this. We all know what it's like to be inspired by the landscape around us, and few trails stand out in North America like the Pacific Crest Trail. With 2,650 miles, the Pacific Crest Trail provides a wide variety of terrain over its epic expanse. And when you're in front of ever-changing trails, you need your shoes to be able to step up to the challenge. It's that need for versatility that inspired Danner's new hiking shoe, the Trail 2650. Built to move quickly and confidently through the terrain of your choosing, the Trail 2650 can easily fill the role of a lightweight hiker or trainer. For Danner, this meant looking to lightweight materials that could withstand the demands of the trail while still keeping comfort and stability in mind. Whether you're out for a day hike, going on a backpacking trip, or simply navigating subtechnical terrain, feeling stable when you're hiking allows you to focus on the world around you. Whenever the timing's right to get back out there, you'll want to be ready to say yes to adventure. The Trail 2650 keeps shifting weather conditions in mind, which is why it comes with a lightweight mesh lining or a waterproof breathable Gore-Tex option. So keep your eyes focused on that next trek ahead of you, knowing that the foundation you need to get out there can be found on your own 2 feet. The rest is up to you. To find out more and see the Women's Trail 2650 series, visit danner.com. That's DANNER.com. We're back. Before the break, we talked about Ashley's path to becoming an archaeologist. She elaborated on why we need more Indigenous archaeologists in the field.
Within the field of archaeology itself, there has been a lot of contention. Historically, archaeologists have not treated the Native American community very well in terms of digging up ancestors' graves without any community input or permission. Or they've, you know, taken not only human remains that are Native American, but also like important cultural items of Native communities. And within the last couple decades, there's this emerging field called Indigenous archaeology. And so there's debate over what that actually means, but essentially it's archaeology for, with, and by Indigenous peoples. And so an example I like to share is for a couple of years, I was working with a professor at University of Arizona on the Blackfeet Nation. And she was able to do a collaborative archaeological project that brought in the Blackfeet Tribal Historic Preservation Office. So a lot of tribes have offices that deal with cultural resources of the tribe and the archaeological resources. And so I got to work, you know, right alongside Blackfeet tribal members to learn more about their history. And in some instances, when that's being done, the goals of the archaeologists and the Indigenous communities can align. So one thing that particular professor has been able to do in her career is they were able to establish a long-term Blackfeet presence in this area of Montana known as Badger Two Medicine. And by showing archaeologically that the Blackfeet have always been there, and the Blackfeet knew they have always been there, their oral tradition and oral history says that, but a lot of times you need the Western science to support those claims. You know, they can come together into a project that can end up in an area being, for example, protected. And so it can help both tribes and archaeologists, like, by showing this long-term presence of human occupation and then being able to protect it legally because of the archaeology that they were able to find there.
Yeah, I mean, I can see how empowering that is. And I can also just assume how frustrating that is, that you have to fit within the box of Western studies or law in order to protect something that should be protected anyway.
Absolutely. So there is that, and archaeology isn't the only field that has to deal with that. There's a lot of, you know, areas within the United States and where Indigenous knowledge isn't taken seriously. It's not taken like it's real or can be proven. And so, unfortunately, that's like an unfortunate case. But fortunately, I think a lot of Indigenous peoples are able to take these Western methodologies and Western theories and adapt them to fit their community needs. And that's a lot of what archaeology is done, Indigenous archaeology is about. So even though we were excavating on the Blackfeet Nation, there's some tribes that don't want to excavate their sites. And so they adapt the archaeological methods to fit those needs. So they might just do like a surface survey where they just see what kind of artifacts are found on the ground surface, or they might, you know, choose not to do any archaeological methods and use more of a traditional approach with like oral histories and oral traditions. So I feel really lucky though to have found this field because it gets to combine a lot of my interests of Indigenous culture and history, but also scientific methods. And then in the end, for the communities that I'm working with rather than for non-Native people.
I bet your professors are so thrilled to have you and, you know, people in your generation on board to be pursuing this field.
Yeah, and I say, yeah, we need more Indigenous archaeologists, but we need like more Indigenous everything. So we need more Indigenous doctors and more Indigenous teachers, you know. So like, I'm really happy to see my generation, maybe even the generation before me, receiving these opportunities to get their education and to fulfill this great need of having our people in all walks of life and in all careers, because it does make a difference. I mean, you see the first Native American women Congress people, Charisse Davids and Deb Haaland, they were just elected in the last midterm election. And, you know, they've already started making Indigenous issues a priority, you know, from Congress's side. So we can make a difference when we enter these fields of study. I strongly believe that.
Where do you see your career path going?
That's a very good question. And I think I'm lucky that I have choices. So, you know, I first got into my PhD program with the intention of being a professor, a faculty member somewhere. And I really do still feel strongly passionate about education. So one of my favorite jobs as a graduate student so far has been being a teaching assistant of a 100 level general ed class in the American Indian Studies department here. And I really love, you know, sharing everything that I've learned with students and then learning from them as well. So that's still a viable possibility. But being in grad school, like, I've come to know that there's a lot of other career options besides academia. So I could be hired by, I mentioned Tribal Historic Preservation Office. A lot of tribal nations have these offices which deal with the cultural and archaeological resources of the tribe. And so I could work somewhere like that. I could also work potentially in a government position. So national parks oftentimes hire archaeologists to manage the resources of that park, to do community outreach, to do consultation with the tribes that deem those areas as part of their homelands. I could also enter into, there's actually private archaeology. So 90% of archaeological work done within the United States is known as cultural resource management, or CRM archaeology. And so those are compliance projects in which different federal and state and tribal laws have certain requirements for projects that use federal and state money or that's done on federal and state land. And so before, for example, a freeway is created, oftentimes a archaeologist or a team might go in there to see what sort of archaeological resources are there, and they can document those resources, or they might, if it's, for example, a huge important site with a lot of like a long-term occupation of where someone might have, a group of people might have lived there for a number of years, a significant site, they sometimes can even turn the project so that it might build around that site or something like that. So I have options, and I'm not sure what route I will take, but I think as long as I'm continuing to learn and connect with Indigenous peoples, as well as find my work fulfilling, I'm going to just kind of stay open and just see what's out there when I graduate in a few years.
Mm-hmm. You're definitely going to be a lifelong learner too.
Yeah. I'm telling my friends, like, I'm almost ready to be done with school because I've been in school almost my entire life and I'm almost 30. But I wouldn't be sad about that because I love learning so much. So yeah, I hope I continue to learn, and I'm sure I will.
Amidst the pandemic, Ashley's been busy with her PhD. I was curious what she's turned to for stress relief.
So I would just say time outside is the big mm-hmm. one. Like I discussed, I really love running. And so that's an easy thing that I can do just out my front door through my neighborhood if my schedule is tight. Otherwise, I can, you know, get to a trailhead and do some trail running. And then before the pandemic hit, I was doing a lot more climbing. And so I really enjoy, ever since I moved to Tucson, I started rock climbing. And during normal circumstances, I would be, you know, at the climbing gym a few days a week with my friends. And so that's become a really important part of my life. The differences between climbing and running are really interesting to me. Climbing is great for a lot of different reasons, but it's this really neat phenomena where when I'm climbing on the wall, that's my only focus. And it's very meditative for me. So that's a really great way for me to deal with my stress when I have a lot going on, because I'm able to just focus on getting up safely, which when there's a lot of different things going on in graduate school and in my personal life, it's a welcome escape from that. And it's fun and it's a workout. It's something I usually do with my friends. So I also get to do this activity along with my friend circle. So that's been a really great stress reliever. And I do just like to get outside on the trails around here with my camera too. So I'll take my dog and we might just go on a little photo hike. I try to get out during, like, you know, the beautiful lighting time. So oftentimes that's around sunset with my camera. And I really enjoy creating photographs too. That's more of my creative outlet. And not only when I'm out there shooting, but also when I bring it back home and I get to, like, look at the photos and, like, edit them in Lightroom and that sort of thing is really a fun hobby for me personally. And I really like photography because it's one of those creative outlets that you can do relatively quickly. I mean, you can spend as much time as you want creating the photograph and doing the post-processing of editing it. But in a pinch, when you're a busy person, it's a nice way to get creative without having to spend too much time doing. So I'd say, like, right now during this pandemic, running and hiking, and then also been trying to create images has been really great for my mental and emotional well-being, and in turn also for my physical health. And I believe wellness is all connected. So for me, the biggest stress relief is getting outside, getting fresh air, moving my body, and sometimes, you know, getting creative with it. So that's been, I'm grateful that I live in such a beautiful place, Tucson, Arizona, to be able to do those sorts of things.
One of the topics Ashley wanted to talk about on this podcast is sobriety. I noticed something in common for all of Ashley's interests: climbing and running, hiking, photography. They all put her in her body and her mind, which is a very different feeling from alcohol, which a lot of us use to numb.
So this Memorial weekend, so coming up in a few weeks, I will be celebrating 3 years of being alcohol free. And for me, my athletic pursuits have been a godsend in dealing with being sober. So So like I mentioned, I have a family history of addiction on both sides of my family. And so ever since I was young, I've seen the destructive forces that alcoholism and other addiction can have on individuals and families and communities. And so, you know, as a young adult, it was always looming in the back of my mind, you know, that alcohol has been such a negative force in my life, in my family's life. And so with my sobriety from alcohol for the last 3 years, I've had to find other activities to take up that time and take the stress away. Because I think since I was an undergrad and into my early years of graduate school, I think that's the role that alcohol played in my life. It was a big stress reliever. I could just have a drink or a few drinks and get immediate relief. And so since I took that drug out of my life, I've had to really focus on the activities that can also bring stress relief. And sure, they're a bit more work than just simply drinking something and feeling, you know, the anxiety lessen. But for me and for my family, and considering my family history, it's a lot healthier way for me to deal with the anxieties and the stressors that occur in my life. And I'm really proud of myself for being able to get rid of this substance that has taken a hold of people in my life, and just, you know, make the choice that that's not something I want for myself and for my future self. So running and climbing and being able to do those sorts of activities within my social relationships really takes the burden off of having to, you know, solve those stressors in other ways, such as drinking.
Congratulations on 3 years. That's a big deal.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know. It seems like it's been forever since I drank. And I guess 3 years is quite a long time. And so I can't imagine my life if I continued drinking. And so I'm happy to be in this place I am now.
I'm happy for you too, just like when you talked about how you feel like you're stronger, that you're a better runner than you've ever been before. And not that it's like a magical thing, you know, to stop one thing and then that, but that it's a lot of things have opened up for you, and that's really cool.
Yeah, like when I was drinking, it disrupted my sleep. When I was training, and if I had been drinking, I'm sure my training wasn't as efficient as it could have been if my, you know, body wasn't having to process that. And like, since I've stopped drinking, my wellness has been way better, and I've been able to set personal records in the 5K, which I never believed would happen after college, because, you know, when you're in college and you're running 6 to 7 days a week and you're competing every week, you think you're, at least I thought I was at like the prime of my running career. And so to be able to be 29 now and training less, I run fewer miles than I did in college, and I run fewer days a week, but I'm able to be a better athlete. And I attribute that definitely in part to leading a healthier lifestyle due to not drinking alcohol. So that's been a really neat side effect that I wasn't anticipating, but that has brought me a lot of pride and happiness to see, you know, my physical self really transform and perform better and be able to set personal records again and to be excited about racing again. So yeah, that's a nice benefit of leading the lifestyle I do now.
Do you feel like you know yourself a little better too?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting to think about how much using a substance like alcohol can impact your relationship to yourself and how you know yourself. It didn't, you know, one of the reasons I drank, I think, was like I said, mainly it was just because it was a huge stress reliever for me. And when you take away that substance, you do, your problems don't go away. Your problems are still there, but you have to find ways to deal with them, whether that be confronting problems in relationships face to face in a healthy way, or whether that be just doing the self work and introspection of trying to understand why things are happening the way they are. You can't just drink something and forget about it. You have to confront it. You can forget about it, but eventually you'll have to confront it. So yeah, I think it has helped me understand myself better. So I don't know, I've heard in our community, alcohol in the Indigenous community talked about as like being a bad spirit. Mm-hmm. And so when you take that out of your life and you release its hold it has on yourself and your being, I think your authentic self comes through and you're able to see, you know, what are your true thoughts in a sober state of mind and what are your true feelings. And you're able to approach those with an open heart and in a good way better than you could when you were drinking. And so it's been really beneficial in that way as well.
And to think that you're not even 30 yet in terms of like all of the work that you've done and getting to know yourself and opening yourself up to what your interests are and how you want to spend your time and how you want to add, you know, to the good of the world.
Yeah, thank you. That reminds me, my grandmother, when I went to college, she gave me this mug and I'm sad I don't have it anymore. I probably got rid of it when I was moving. I moved several times as an undergrad, I think like every year, but she gave me this mug and it sat on my desk in my dorm room for a while. And I put pencils and pens in it. And I had this quote that said, life isn't about finding yourself. It's about creating yourself. And that quote has really stuck with me, especially like through the lens of my grandmother. And to me, you know, it means people might go on trips or these journeys to quote unquote find themselves. And I mean, I kind of get that. But what that quote says to me is, you know, we have agency in our life and we have the power to make decisions. And some things are out of our control, but we can choose how we respond to what's going on. And so I think a lot of people, maybe in my circumstances, that went through some of the traumatic things I experienced as a child, they might walk away and let it really negatively impact them. But I really try to learn from those experiences, to grow from them, to heal from them, and to make choices for myself, such as not drinking and choosing to lead an active lifestyle. And through my choices, I'm able to create the life that I want. And I'm really grateful for that teaching, which has been revealed to me time and time again about, you know, our agency and how we approach things. And I think my grandmother, she probably doesn't even remember giving me that mug. I should ask her. But looking back on it now, it's one of those lessons as a young adult I was able to take on and internalize. Because when I went to college, I was really excited for that reset button and that opportunity to like move to a new place, to meet new people, to experience new things. And I soaked it all in. I told myself when I went to college, I was going to be involved in student organizations, that I was going to do all of the things that I either didn't have time to do, or I didn't have the confidence to do as a high school student or younger. And, you know, it's just the things I was able to say yes to, like the research experiences I did, or the different clubs I was able to join, running on different teams, traveling as much as I've been able to do through those different things, but also, you know, on my own, has really helped me create this life that I'm really grateful for and that I really love. And I'm happy that I was given that gift by my grandmother. But then also I think there's some resiliency in me and my brother that has helped us to deal with a lot that we encountered when we were younger, but to turn it around and create the life we want to lead.
Thank you to Ashley for the conversation. You can find her on Instagram, Ash Anishinaabe. That's Ash, A-S-H, Anishinaabe, A-N-I-S-H-I-N-A-A-B-E. On her Instagram, Ashley shares her many interests and her gorgeous photography. I'll be sure to include a link to that and some other resources in the show notes. Thank you to our sponsor, Danner. You can find She Explores on social media, our website, and wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find me on Instagram at Gale, G-A-L-E, Straub, S-T-R-A-U-B. If you enjoy listening, there are different ways to support us. You can subscribe, leave a review, and share with a friend. And if you'd like to connect, join us in the She Explores podcast Facebook group. Music in this episode is by Lee Rosefair, Maiden, and Swelling, using a Creative Commons Attributions license. She Explores is a production of Ravel Media, released on Wednesdays. Until next week, have fun out there.